DavidRenicky.com. It's a website you need to get familiar with. I'm familiar with the man himself. David, hello, welcome.
Okay, good on you. Wouldn't be anywhere else. Good morning.
Now, you have a fascination for space travel and astronauts, of course. You've gone over and, you know, perused the Kennedy Space Center. You've written a book all about the moon landing. Tell us about astronauts sleeping in space. I thought this would be probably the easiest thing to do. There being no weight or anything, you'd fall asleep like a baby.
When we mention this to people, I get some really funny reactions. When you're at home, you can lie down on your bed quite successfully. No worry in the world. You roll over, everything is fine, but when you go up in space, things are different. Because remember, you're in a weightless condition, and there's no truth to the rumour that you've got no gravity. You still have gravity on.
Do you?
The gravity is the same as when you're on planet Earth, except you're in a falling mode. That's what being weightless is all about. So being weightless means that everything floats. Nothing falls down. It falls up. And that goes for your head and your body as well. If you try and lie down on your bed on the space station, you'll float away. Now, if you, what time's your program on in the morning?
Oh, very early, mate, like 5 a.m.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
If you might pass wind, you will move forward. You will move forward a little bit. If you sneeze, you would move backwards. Now, we've known about that for a long time, so this is going to surprise you and a lot of your listeners that when you go to sleep on the space station, you've got two choices. You've got your own little booth, which is about the size of a phone booth. Remember the old boxes on the corner? About that size, and you can lay down on your pillow. But we normally, what they do is they put you in a sleeping bag and they Velcro you to the wall.
Oh, okay.
True. You might think that, you know, I've lost my wits here, but this is what they do because...
Isn't that what spiders do to their prey? They sort of wrap them in a cocoon and stick them to something?
That's right. The same sort of principle.
Yeah.
But if you want to lay down on your bed there and have a little bit of a rest, which they can do, actually your head is Velcroed to the pillow. This is what we've learned to do up there. I mean, you're in a different environment. When we finally do travel in space in the future and space tourism gets its legs, you won't have this trouble because they'll eventually, you know, give you 1G by spinning the space station or whatever you're in. But at the moment, this is not a hospital. It's not an entertainment facility. The space station is a research outpost, and that's exactly what it's for, to work out how do we go live and work in space there. But it's funny when you think about it, and I've got a great photo on my website
okay. With
the story of somebody in a sleeping bag being, you know, actually one of the astronauts sleeping. They sleep about 6 hours a night. And it is, you get used to it fairly well.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go.
Not as unusual as going to the toilet when you've actually got to stick your bum to the O-ring, is it?
That's a little bit different.
Mm.
When you go to the loo there, and I've seen one of these in operation, you sit down like you normally do at home, and there's a little camera in front of you or a screen, and there's a camera behind you, so you can position yourself right in the right spot. Because it's like an aeroplane toilet. It's not a big target. And when you sit there, you'll find a vacuum pump will start up that fits around your bottom, and everything is sucked out into a recycling bin, which is attached to the space station. And when they come back home, they jettison that and it burns up in the air.
Yeah, okay, right. So we are polluting space, but it's organic matter, and that's okay.
No, it's up there. It burns all up. It just becomes a vapor and just falls down to the ocean.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. That's interesting. Have a look at the pictures at davidrenicky.com. Interesting stuff there. Now, we've talked about black holes in the past few weeks. Now, astronomers are saying they've found a wandering black hole. This sounds frightening.
Well, this is crazy. Nobody would ever think that these black holes would detach themselves or have no outer extremities if they do. So when we think of a black hole, I made the analogy today, which is a bit silly. I like to do these sort of things. Get a frying pan and crack an egg into the frying pan and have a look at it. You've got a central yellow yolk, and all the outside of it is that white circular piece. That's what a black hole would look like if you're looking down on top of it.
Yeah.
So the center part is what we're talking about, the yolk. If you took the yolk out of that frying pan and pulled it aside, that's left the rest of the stuff on one side, and they're all the planets and everything, because black holes underpin and hold everything together in a galaxy, but we've seen them wandering around out there. There's a black hole being found which is a fair distance from here, a bit over 5,000 light years away, doesn't pose any problem to us, but it's out there. It's a rogue black hole floating around from somewhere. How it can be detached from wherever it came from is a mystery at the moment.
Makes me think it's almost like either under intelligent control or it's almost a spaceship, mate.
Well, we don't know. The dynamics of the universe still elude us in a lot of ways. How that became ejected, we know that stars can be ejected from galaxies. We see that. We know that planets can be ejected and comets as well, but not the central part of it. It's a lone wolf galaxy, a black hole shooting around out there. So there you go, and you can't see them because, by definition, they're black.
Yeah,
and they're
well,
in the blackness of space. So.
As some girls say, once you go black, you can never go back.
Yeah, if you might run into one of those, you could end up anywhere. Yeah.
Hey, China, pat them on the back here. They're doing tests beaming solar power from space to the Earth. This could revolutionise our power-guzzling world.
Wouldn't you think we could do this sometime in the past there and have this all done and ready to go?
Yeah.
China are very good at research. They're doing some really good space work, let alone the politics. Let's put that aside. The only country in the world looking into the technology here, and California's Institute of Technology have got their own space program based on this. They've started up a little while back. This technology, this work has been done over the last 10 to 15 years, but it's only just come to the fore now that China have a model power station at one of the universities that's captured sunlight high above the ground. And what they've done there, they've converted it into microwave beams and transmitted that to a receiving station on the ground, where it's converted back to electricity. Hello? This is what we need.
Yes.
This is what we've been trying to do. So in the future, and I always say in the future because it's an eventuality, we're not going to be using fossil fuels. We're talking about electric cars now. There's different types of propulsion systems. Everything's going to change, and you'll find that in the future when we finally do get the technology to build these solar panels and these platforms big enough, orbiting the Earth out there, picking the sunlight up, which, by the way, is there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you're going to have that energy, free energy. You'll go, this doesn't cost you anything. It's there, and it's coming from our sun, and we can convert that and use it. We can run the whole world basically for nothing, just for the administration costs. And here's something that's going to really surprise you and your listeners.
Yeah.
You've seen a picture of a solar flare, these tongues of fire shooting out from the sun.
Is it the Elon Musk one?
Well, just imagine a picture of the sun you've seen with these flames shooting out, a solar flare.
Yeah.
Some of these flares can be 100,000 K long. Do you know what? One of those solar flares, Bilko, if you could grab the total energy of that solar flare, there's enough energy there to power all of Australia for 10 years.
Yeah, look, Doc was doing it in Back to the Future. He tried to harness the power of the lightning into the fusion generator to get 1.21 gigawatts of power.
Gigawatts.
Yeah. But if we have the idea of doing that, someone thought that up even for a movie. If that got turned into reality, imagine harnessing that energy every time a storm came.
That was done in 1985, that movie. And even back then, there were people like Gerard O'Neill who were visionaries, others that have come and gone, and Arthur C. Clarke and people like that, who foresaw this type of thing. It's not new, but the ability to do it is now within our grasp to do it. And you've only got to turn the telly on this morning or the news or whatever, and tonight, what are they talking about? They're talking about the cost of energy, aren't they? This is what's on everyone's mind at the moment.
Yeah, told to turn off air conditioners and heaters, and hospitals told to run only one office and don't run printers. I mean, that should never be an issue in this day and age, especially now.
We've got a generator out there that's been burning for 5 billion years, and it's going to continue to burn for another 5 billion years. Why don't we tap it?
That's amazing. You know what? One day someone will wake up, but, of course, everyone wants someone else to actually get out there and do it. NASA's now creating an official task force to find out about UFOs. I mean, you and I have talked about this at length. You've been part of the UFO, community in your past life. What are NASA saying with this task force? UFOs, are they of the Earth, not of the Earth? I mean, it's an argument that seems to be very circular.
Now, I never thought I'd live long enough to see this come out from the Pentagon, but they finally come out saying they've created a task force, official task force.
Right.
They don't call them UFOs. They're UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. But NASA planned to commission a study. A team are going to be working at the end of the year and collating as much information they can. What they're going to do is gather the best cases, the best data from pilots, from civilians, from non-government organizations like what we were doing, and analyze it and see what's in the mix there. This study will take probably a year to complete, up to a year, and the total input there from everywhere, they say, will be available to the public. Now, it's a big step for NASA to do that.
Yeah.
They always said they don't have any study, or haven't been studying it. They don't have anything held back. And I never believed they did anyway. All countries of the world have experienced UFO phenomena, and it's been going for a long time. So the question is, A, what are they? And B, who's driving these things? And it's all come about from these Tic Tacs we talked about. You can't deny that. That's what's driven this. These objects seen by fighter pilots as far back as 2003 and up until the present day that have objects moving and seen by pilots, looked at and picked up on radar and reported to have dynamics, movements that defy our known laws of physics and gravity. How can we do that? We don't understand this. They're there. And that's why the United States has said to come out. People who have reported these over years aren't crazy. They have been seeing real things like our pilots are. And they've now commissioned a study to try and find out what's going on.
And this Dr. Michio Kaku is now coming out saying the aerodynamics in UFOs are nothing like humans can produce today. I'd actually defy that because I'm sure we have the ability to develop that some of our test aircraft.
You can't do what they're doing. This one object was seen on radar, picked up on radar, and by the fighter pilots, who were vectored to go to another area 90 kilometres away. As soon as that order was given, that object moved there.
What do you mean, instantaneously?
Within 1 second.
Wow, that's almost like matter transportation, isn't it?
Well, what is it? I don't know. Mm. The objects were real, they were hard returns,
yep,
and they were seen to move and do that. One of them was also picked up on radar some time back, hovering at the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. Then all of a sudden, before you could blink your eye, it was picked up just above the ocean level.
Yeah.
So we don't understand what's going on. The popular theory that I'm following at the moment is that these are unmanned, or when you say manned, not under living control. I think there's some sort of a drone.
Yeah, that's the word.
If they're a technology that we're using here on Earth, how come we're still travelling around in the cars and the planes we got and moving at the slow pace we are now?
That's what I can't understand. Why is that technology being suppressed? Because surely all mankind would benefit. But then again, we could live in a society without petroleum, but the big oil companies certainly wouldn't want to let go of their stranglehold, would they?
Look, have you got about 30 seconds left on this?
Yeah.
Can I just say to you that consider also that if this is an advanced society that have been visiting here, we could be like microbes in a drop of water, and they're looking at us with a microscope as we do, or we do with it with microbes. If you imagine going back to 5,000 years ago to the Stone Age, or whatever, maybe even before then, to even Neanderthal man, imagine going back there and showing him your computer. He's not going to have a clue what you're talking about. You can't have people there on a screen talking to you. He would see that as magic.
Mm.
And as Arthur C. Clarke once said, any technology capable of coming here from a distant place like that would appear to us to be like magic.
Yeah.
But there you go. We've got to rationalize it and work it out. Anyway, look, you can go on forever about it, but the objects are real. The study is real. And I'm just so glad I've lived long enough to see the United States come out and publicly state that these things do exist and they're looking at it.
Yeah, it's a great philosophical discussion. I mean, it will go round and round until we get living proof. You know what? Until we get Oprah or Jerry Springer sitting down with another being from another planet, it won't enter our psyche.
Anyway,
if you want to find out more about astronauts sleeping in space or about the wandering black hole, go to davidrenicki.com. And you've still got listener questions you're answering on there, which is great, mate.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yep. And if you want to buy a telescope, we'll help you with that as well.
Will you? Because the skies have been so clear at the moment for night viewing.
Look, I was on the ABC overnight there with Trevor Chappell there 2 weeks ago, and they mentioned somebody rang in about buying a telescope. And I gave them a few pointers. I got about 12 emails from people all across Australia that are wanting to buy one, don't know how to get one.
Yeah.
It's not hard when you know what I know, and the choice only comes down to a couple.
Is there a shortage of telescopes at the moment with overseas manufacturing?
Yeah, okay. They're coming back now. Yeah, we're gradually getting stock in around the world, but they sold out during, just as the pandemic struck, people were stuck at home, Bilko, and they needed some diversion, you know. So telescopes are sold out right around the world. I've never seen that before.
Incredible. People love to have diversions. Anyway, more of all that sort of stuff on the davidreneke.com website. Have a look at it today. Till next week, David.
Talk to you then.